nothing for this.
What is nothing?
Yeah, that's deep.
What in the fuck are we doing here?
Free socks. What is something?
That's deep, bro. Serious questions with silly people. I am your host, Christina P. And I can't hear. Oh, there we go. I can hear my beautiful voice in this microphone now. Hope you're well. I hope your week is starting off great. It's a Tuesday as this drops, but I record this in a different time and space. It's actually a few days before. And I just played tennis for the first time in like a year and a half. And I feel great. I feel like a human being again. I'm slowly resurrecting like a phoenix from the ashes of pregnancy and early motherhood. I'm finally entering the land of the living, doing things like exercising and seeing people and having guests on the show, which I haven't had in a while just because it's been super hard to schedule. But my guest today is Eleanor Kerrigan. I think she's one of the funniest people at the Comedy Store. I see her all the time, and I just thought I would invite her over and have a talk because I love Eleanor Kerrigan. She's super funny, and but we're going to talk about a super funny super unfunny topic of depression, which I think comedians know more than most people. That's not true. Actually. No, I think that everyone's depressed. I just think the comedians talk about it more because we overshare. It's part of the job. And because we're in bars, generally we work in places that are kind of low frequency, meaning alcohol, nighttime, drugs around. A lot of bad things can happen to you in a comedy club if you're not, you know, you don't have your head on, right, basically. A lot of occupational hazards. So also, we spend a lot of time alone. Comedians being on the road, you spend a lot of time by yourself during the day in various hotels in cities that you normally wouldn't go to or wouldn't want to be in. So I think that's why we tend to get depressed more. And then we don't like feelings, which is why we joke and we don't share feelings. And then we end up, blowing our brains out. but before that, come see me at the Comedy Store in La Jolla, May 27th and May 28th. Follow me on Twitter at Christina P.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, I'm feeling good. I exercised for the first time in a million years. So why don't we, let's do a little bossa nova. You know what I'm saying? I like this one. This one's silly. I love, you know me. You know I love bossa nova. You know Christina's in a good mood when she opens with a little Sergio Mendes. I don't even know if I'm saying it the way I would think it is. Mendes and the Brazil 66. Brazil. Ay, Mashkinada. But this isn't Mashkinada. It's a different song. Here you go.
This is just a little samba built up on a single note. Our notes are bound to follow, but the root is still that note. Now this new one is a consequence of a one we've just been through, as I'm bound to be the unavoidable consequence of you. There's so many people who can talk and talk and talk and just say nothing, when you leave nothing. Skill and knowing that the end I come to nothing, when you leave nothing. So I come back to my first note, as I must come back to you. I will pour into that one note all the love I feel for you. Anyone who wants the whole show, re mi fa sol la ti do, he will find.
This is Eleanor Kerrigan.
Hi. Oh, we're started. Oh,
yeah,
shoot.
We started rolling.
See, I just keep talking.
No, you're good.
It's all
good.
The sugar.
I absolutely love you. I've seen you at the Comedy Store for a long, long time, and I've been wanting to, like, befriend you and know you more, and I'm so excited
Please.
That you're here. And first of all, where can people find you?
Where can they find me? Oh, that's laxative voices. Find me on Facebook, mm-hmm. Eleanor Kerrigan. I have Facebook, Twitter.
Okay. What's your Twitter handle? One?
The same thing. I think it's Eleanor Kerrigan or E.J. Kerrigan. I grew up in a typewriter store, so I apologize in advance for not knowing any of this. My niece just screamed at me about not being on Snapchat.
Oh, that's the worst. I made my face into a taco.
So I don't know if that's the new thing.
It's horrible.
But you guys are weird.
It's all horrible.
Yeah.
And you're doing some shows.
I'm in New Jersey, June 10th and 11th at Uncle Vinny's Comedy Club in Point Pleasant.
Okay.
June 10th and 11th, yeah.
June 10th and 11th. So if you're in the area, come out and see.
Come, Jersey, come. Oh, my God. It's so much fun. I mean, Point Pleasant is like hoity-toity-ish area. I mean, like, because I'm a hood rat. I grew up in South Philly. When we would vacation in Wildwood, and we would just stay at my aunt's house. And like I told you, I'm one of 10, and my Aunt Joy had 10 kids, too.
So
that's a tribe, basically.
It's crazy.
It should have been illegal. Like,
it's horrible.
So many of us. And we would vacation with them. So that's 20 kids.
Oh, my God.
Four parents.
Oh, my God.
Like, I don't know how they did it.
Your mother had 10 children.
Yeah, she's
Why?
In my prayers. Because Catholics are boring and they don't believe in any of the fun stuff like birth control, pulling out, abortion.
Right.
They have all these rules.
So
no,
horrible.
But back then it was a big deal. You know what I mean? Like big families were a big thing. My mom's 78 years old.
Oh my God.
I'm at the bottom of the litter. I'm number 8.
Ugh. So did you, I mean, you're at the bottom, so you're basically taking care of the people that are younger than you.
Well, and, I only have two younger than me, and I have 6 brothers and 3 sisters.
And did they raise you pretty
much? Well, pretty much, that's what happened. Yeah. And then my dad tagged out, because he's a good guy. And,
shit.
But it wasn't like he left, like I never saw him. He moved like a couple blocks away. I'd see him, I'd be like, hey, Dad, it's number 8.
Are you serious?
8. Yeah, no, my dad owned a typewriter store. Don't get excited, guys. I'm very wealthy. Obviously, my trust fund's coming soon.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a Underwood. I'm not sure. We'll see. You young people can Google that. So he had a typewriter store a couple blocks from where we grew up. And we had to work for him every day after school. So from 4th grade all the way to 12th grade, I had to work. It was almost like a prison sentence, to be honest. And it was like he left, so he didn't want to deal with us. So what he'll do is he'll pay us next to nothing. Like, you could call it an allowance or whatever, but, like, I remember being in high school and he'd give me $10 a week. And I'm like, I will stab you. But he's a big Marine, so I didn't.
Oh, he's a Marine.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So was he away? Was he on active? Sorry, I'm not.
He fought in Korea, and then his dad got real sick, so he came home. He has two older brothers, and he came home to help out and get situated with the typewriter store, because it was kind of lucrative back then.
That is how people... I had a word processor in high school, and I thought that was like the
height. I remember a word processor coming in to the typewriter
coming
store
in.
And my dad being like, what the hell is this shit, girl? That's the other thing. He never calls us by our names.
Yeah.
We're boy or girl.
Yeah, of course.
So
how could he remember you?
Exactly. I've at least graduated to California girl, so he knows I'm not there anymore. But it was boy or girl. So everything was very military. It was, you know, he would leave us in the typewriter store. Me and my brother Billy were Irish twins, you know, born in the same year.
Oh, is that what they call that?
Yeah.
Oh, so it was bang bang, like your mom.
Oh yeah,
the stitches didn't heal.
Yeah, not at all. Like
oh,
I
God.
Do a joke about that. I'm like, lady, you need to sit down, cross your legs, take a minute, calm down.
I couldn't even imagine.
All 10 were only 15 years apart from eldest to youngest. And there's a 3-year gap in between Johnny and Charlie.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Who does that? I can't even. I have one and I'm struggling and it's horrible.
I can't believe you have one. I'm so proud
of you. It's
too
hard. Oh, stop. No, I'm just kidding. Stop. So, wait. So, Eleanor, you have quite an interesting story in comedy.
Some say interesting. Others say sad. No, I'm just kidding. Oh, in comedy. Yeah, comedy.
In life and in comedy, your world's, I don't know. You should explain it.
In comedy, though, it is weird. It is interesting slash sad because I worked as a waitress at the Comedy Store for 12 years. I also was Mitzi. I was her personal assistant for like 5 or 6 of those years.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I didn't even know that bit. I didn't know that.
It was insane. And so,
for those of you who don't know, Mitzi Shore is the owner of the Comedy Store.
Yes. And she...
Pauly Shore's mother.
If you don't like Pauly Shore, here's why. No, I'm kidding. no, like, she's great, but she's hard. Like, oh, like in business, you know, the women get a little bit like, oh, she's a bitch, you know, because she's tough.
Yeah.
But she kind of sometimes would go out of her way. Like if it was a man, you'd be like, he's a dick. You know, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Like sometimes she would go out of her. But other times she was so good to me because I didn't want to be a comic. So I didn't want anything from her. So she could trust me. And she wanted me to help her write a book. And I was like, oh, I could barely read. I went to Catholic school in South Philly. I didn't go a lot. I played hooky. I think 1 year I had 65 days absent.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Horrible, terrible child. But I would hide everything from my mom. It was easier back then. Hide shit.
And that's how you should. I feel like today children are too trusting. There's no penalties.
Everything goes email to the parents right away. You're screwed.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, my nephew, if he doesn't do his homework, it comes on my sister-in-law's thing. She's like, ballet. And I'm like, oh. And I thought we were just...
Because lying is...
I was trying to teach him how to play hooky.
Yeah.
Like a good hand.
Well, because lying, I think, is a really important part of teenagehood.
Absolutely.
And of... You have to learn how to lie to your parents to do things.
Yeah, the fun things. Did you grow up out here?
I did. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley.
I'm sorry.
I was fucking terrible. It was terrible. But that's...
You played hooky from school, normal
absolutely.
Stuff?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But what they'd do is they'd call home, and I knew what time they'd call.
Yeah.
And it was like a right around dinner time, so you knew just to pick up the phone and make sure you got the call.
The beauty of coming from a tribe is...
The tribe.
One, my dad had a typewriter store, so my mom had to get a real job. And... feed us.
That's crazy.
So she worked all day.
Holy fuck.
She worked for the Philadelphia Navy Shipyard, and she was a secretary and moved up rather quickly because she had 10 kids to feed and a kook who was having an affair with some other woman and not paying any child support. Nothing.
Jesus.
Not a thing. But she's that Irish, I don't know if you know that, Irish, I'll do it myself. The martyr, I'll take care of it. I'll do it all by myself. So there would be like weeks where we had no electricity, no lights, no heat. That was awful. The lights were bad because I remember getting dressed for a funeral in lights. A good friend of mine got killed. And I went to the funeral and realized I had a pink shirt on. And I was like, shit. You know, because my friend Cindy was like, what are you wearing? And I'm like, what? And I looked and it was like a predominantly black, but it had like pink spots on it.
Oh my God.
I was like, oh, Eleanor, like, honestly.
You need your own podcast, Eleanor. You got
to
tell these.
Yeah, I have to learn how to download.
I think you're doing, seriously, because it sounds like you have so much stuff in your past that, like,
it's gold.
It's comedy gold.
Because I couldn't afford therapy, so everybody's getting it now.
It's great.
Listen up, guys.
But it's great because there's somebody listening that this will resonate with in any way.
Well, yeah, because I think I meet a lot of people like me that grew up with crazies and bizarre Catholic families, and I mean, met that stubborn Irish that my mom is, that I love, because she's also not that cold Irish. I don't, what nationality are you?
And we're Hungarian. We're Eastern Bloc, so we're very cold.
So that's pretty
cold.
Strong, too. Yeah, you guys get cold, too. Yeah,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
But my dad's side, more like that, where they, you know, if I hugged my dad, his arms would be at his side, like, what the hell is this, girl? Like,
horrible.
But my mom wasn't like that. My mom was a cuddler, and she'll nurture you. You know, she was good. My grandmom was like that. My grandmom was my mom's mom was orphaned at like
my God.
12.
Hey, my mother was orphaned at 12.
Yeah, so isn't that
does
weird?
Something to you. That I think there's no healing. Sorry, I don't mean to be rude. I'm trying to close this so that it doesn't interfere with our sound.
Oh. But did your mom like... because like my grandma was like, I just want a family that's close and knows everybody. Like
aww.
She had a terrible kind of upbringing.
Yeah.
And it was because they were mostly immigrants from Ireland and they would just, you know, just start drinking, not be able to survive, not be able to figure it out.
Well, yeah. And there's so much trauma of being an immigrant. I think that it takes a few generations before the trauma of coming to this country, being poor, learning languages or whatever you're doing.
Absolutely.
And then it comes out. It's a lot. You have a lot in your background.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So, but you go to the Comedy Store. So something in you gravitated towards.
Oh, no, it didn't. This is what happened. I moved here from South Philadelphia, a student of Temple University, where Bill Cosby went. And no, I did not get raped by him, but I tried. And I dropped out. I was a theater major sitting in a Shakespeare class in a Fila suit. Amazing.
Nice.
My ponytail pulled nice and tight in case I got into a fight on the train home.
Nice.
And so, like, I was just in, you know, this is what I wanted, to be a serious Meryl Streep type actress. I could cry on cue. My mom called me Jezebel from the day I was born. Like, I just, what was the other lady? She called me Dorothy somebody. I forget, because I could just get caught in a lie and bring tears that would bring the house down. And my brothers loved it because I could get them out of anything. So I was like, I'm going to be Meryl Streep. And I moved to LA in January of 93. And I couldn't find a job anywhere. But I lived in the right behind the Comedy Store in the hills.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, what's this place? Because it's pitch black.
No, it's so depressing.
It's terrifying during the day.
Yeah.
It's vampire-ish.
Yeah.
During the day, you're like, is this a... What is that?
Comedy clubs, bars, movie theaters. If you ever see them in the light of day, it's so disgusting. I worked in a bar for a while, too. And I just remember at daytime, like, the smell of
the carpets.
The condiments, the carpet. Yeah. If you fucking saw what the orange slices go into in the day, or the maraschino cherries, I never put them in drinks or eat them because they're filthy.
Yeah.
If someone dirtbags hands, the waitress's hands are in it all night. I tell people, never eat garnishes.
Never, ever, ever.
It's so disgusting.
And I mean, there are a lot of girls that are waitresses. I can only speak for cocktail waitresses because we did it at the store where Mitzi used to give us the picks. We had the picks, so you had to do it with the picks. She didn't want
smart.
Her hands in it because she kind of had that phobia as well with
smart.
The touching. So we went through a lot of years where we didn't have the money, so there were some times where those picks weren't there. I don't know if they're still there anymore.
Of course.
But we always had the picks.
And that's smart.
So even with the olives, she said it was disgusting because the other thing that would happen was your hands.
Yeah.
Like from the waitress, from the cherry juice, the lemon juice, all that shit.
Oh, God.
So you don't want that. And so I like using the picks. So if you go to a place and they have the picks, you're like, oh, okay, not bad.
That's
bad.
A step up from your disgusting hands.
I mean, they may
hands.
Not have cleaned that dish that they put it in.
Fuck no. Or cups. I just remember when I worked in a bar. Yeah, the glass. They just rinse them in filthy water and then towel them off. My recommendation to you is if you're not at like a top place, wine is even gross. Maybe chilled wine, like a white wine I would order.
Why chill? What makes it cleans the glass out?
It doesn't clean the glass out. No, a beer in the bottle. That's obviously like the safest. Like pretend you're in Mexico. Basically,
always.
When you go to a bar.
Yeah. Mexico has taken over the United States anyway. So
that's true.
Just constantly think you're in Mexico.
Just think you're always going to get diarrhea from whatever you're drinking. So you're at the store. And
so I remember I went during the day. My roommate and I, my old roommate, we walked all over LA. Because this is the other part. I grew up on the East Coast in South Philly, where you could take a bus or a train to Boston for $8. So I never had a license. I was 21 years old.
A lot of people don't from the East Coast. Yeah, there's no reason to drive.
21 years old walking around LA like, what the heck?
Yeah. No, it's me. I'm making sure that this is recording. I have recorded guests before and then nothing. The recording. Yeah, just so you know. That's why I'm like a little distracted. Please don't take it.
No,
don't
I'm not. Offended. I just feel bad. Do you need to check it?
Or? No, we're good. So okay. so you're walking around.
So walking around and I forget why my roommate left. Maybe because he found a job. So we stopped helping each other. I forget who found the job first, me or him. But I said, let me try this place because it was walking distance from where I live.
Perfect.
So I was like, God, if I get the job, then, you know, I don't have to worry about not having a license because I'm a loser. And cars are whizzing by me as I'm like,
of course.
Like, damn it.
Of course.
So I went in and I was like, is this a real place? Like, it was so scary. And then I hear all this laughing in the office, in the little office in the back, because it's a delivery entrance. So I went in that door. And they're laughing and goofing. And I was like, hi, are you guys hiring? They're like, come on in. And I'm like, oh, hey. And it was this waitress named Debbie, manager named Rod, and the talent coordinator at the time named Scott Day. And I say his whole name because I love him. And I don't remember the other people's names. But they were like, yeah, we're hiring. Yeah, Mitzi will be in later this afternoon. And of course, the talent coordinator was like, you know what? She really likes tall girls. So you should wear heels. So I don't have real high heels. I don't do that. You know what I mean? But I had like a cute little wedge heel thing that I was wearing at the time. Because I'm 5'8". You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're already very tall.
And I'm in South
tall.
Philly. I'm like Godzilla. You understand?
Yeah.
I was eating soup off my prom date's head. Like, you can't. I felt like a goon in heels. So I only had a little. But I wore it anyway. And thank God I didn't come in with like kiss boots on, because Mitzi is tiny and hates tall girls. They were messing with me.
Oh, shit.
So I am literally leaning over her and going, yeah. And she's like, where are you from? And I'm like, Philadelphia. Oh, what? Like, just looking up at me with this like distant look, like and hatred. But thank God she was into Philadelphia. Because of Dom Irrera.
Whom I love, Dom Irrera.
One of my best friends in the world.
Oh, he's the best, dude.
And
so
I got hired because of that. And she was good. Okay, but lose the shoes. But that's why me and Scott became good friends, because I was like, he was messing with me.
Yeah, right. And that's a real friend from
the
beginning.
And that's what the Comedy Store does.
Yeah.
And they always did. Even if you were a phone guy, they would mess with you and tell you all odd hours to come in, and you'd stand there like a dick, like, where is everybody? And just, they did it every time. Yes. Make sure you put this on your resume. It helps out. You know, it's a comedy club. You're supposed to mess with them.
Yeah. The store is one, it used to really have a darker reputation, I think, because of the former Booker.
Oh, yeah.
Who's gone now.
It's odd that you use the word darker. He was so anti that.
But there was like,
you would think it would be like a bright light that went away.
Oh, my God. It had a very dark energy to it. But the tides have turned, and there's a new
I feel
guy,
guilty
Adam.
For that energy.
Why?
Because the thing, I was waiting tables there. And when I got that job in 93, I had only been there maybe 4 months. 4 or 5 months at this point. And I'm putting up signs. I'll cover all shifts. And of course, I'm from, you know, an idiot. I spelled shifts wrong and put shits or something. So every comic took that note and called me. And these were house phone days, 93. So they were calling all, hey, you want to cover my shit? I need you to cover my shit tonight. Every comic would call from the Comedy Store phone because I put a stupid sign up on the billboard. I mean, round the clock. And then they call and hit on me. I really think you're cute. You know, I'm like, mother.
Always.
And so I like literally 4 or 5 months in, a bunch of waitresses came in early. They got Carney's, which is close to
the hot dog place.
The little hot dog place. And Mitzi came in and she was like, what is that smell?
Oh, God.
And I'm putting my, changing my clothes because I had to walk. I had this, at this point, moved and had to walk from Martell and Sunset to the store because I still didn't have a license.
Oh, my God.
So I'm a whopping 110 pounds at that point.
Oh, my God.
I think it's stick figure. It's gross. But all I did was walk everywhere. So I was walking. I was, like, changing my clothes so I can not smell like a foot. And I hear her say that, and I'm like, I don't want to make eye contact with that lady. I'll lose my job. And she went up into the manager's office and had them fire all those waitresses that were eating carnies. So
wow.
I became low man on the top man on the totem pole immediately because she fired everybody.
Oh my
But
gosh.
That's how bizarre she could be, firing people for eating carnies.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. That is kind of a show business.
It's
thing.
A wacky.
Yeah, where you're like,
know,
I'm not sure.
Call it psychotic
thing. Yeah, no, I know. I've worked for people like that where you're like, what's it going to be like today?
Yeah, and it was packed that night. And
right.
I knew my stuff. You know, it's waiting tables, not brain surgery. But it's like, still, you go from having a section to four sections.
Oh, my God.
So now I'm like a chicken without, freaking out. And then I moved up quick. And then she made me, like, head waitress. I don't know why. I don't know why she liked me. I don't really feel it. Like, I don't understand.
Don't question it. When people like that like you, just
roll. She used to buy me weird gifts for Christmas. Like, she bought me a robe one time. And then the weirder part was she was like, this is for Flo. And the manager was like, who's Flo? And that one. And he goes, that's Eleanor.
Eleanor.
And I had been there for like 5 years at that point, 3 or 5 years. And I was like, what the hell, Flo? And then I remembered that stupid waitressing movie. Remember the show?
Mel's Diner. Flo. I love that show.
And I was like, is that what I look like?
You know, look like Kiss My Grits. She was the best one, though. But Flo was the most beloved of all of them.
So every manager.
Alice. The show is called Alice.
That's right. Every
they worked
manager
at Mel's Diner.
Wrote me down as Flo.
Oh, how funny.
And I was pissed. I was like, God damn it. But I always like loved being funny. My whole family's funny. My brothers are crazy.
Well, I imagine you'd have to be too to get any kind of attention.
Oh, exactly. But to
like
come
that.
Here and have people mess with you, I was like, this is amazing. It's like home.
Right.
They hate me too. Right. This is great. Except for Mitzi. She liked me and she would buy me bathrobes. I still have it. It's very strange. What she would give me some of her old jewelry. I have ridiculous old Mitzi jewelry. It's whatever. So, but the thing is she would fire people like that constantly. Mm. And one day, me and this manager, Rob, she had fired phone guys for not answering the phone properly, like a bunch of them. So we didn't have anybody. And here in walked Tommy. And I was like, we got to hire him. And Rob's like, I didn't even talk to him yet. I'm like, I don't give a shit. We need a body.
Yeah.
So I don't even think he filled out an application. We just sent him upstairs.
So for those of you listening, Tommy,
I'm so sorry.
Tommy is the Voldemort of the Comedy Store for many years, and the gatekeeper. And essentially, you know, hey, I wasn't really there for those years, and I think part of it being because that man was the gatekeeper, and he had a lot of seemingly arbitrary rules and, you know, weird things.
It got in him because let me tell you, when he first started, he was the nicest guy. I mean, maybe we didn't know that other side of him because he would just play his guitar, smoke weed, and answer the phone properly. And if Mitzi called, he'd talk to her. And sometimes she'd call with outlandish things and say crazy, because she was kind of starting her beginning stages of dementia. And so she would fall asleep to the news and wake up with a bizarre story. Oh. And Tommy would calm her down. So they became tight that way because we were running the club, but he was calming her down on the phone.
Right.
And then Duncan Trussell was the town coordinator.
How funny is that?
Sorry about that, Duncan. That was our fault again there. Because before him was Princess Corey. And Corey was married to Freddie Soto, who was my best friend.
Mm.
Freddie was my best friend. And Corey was his wife, was the town coordinator at the Comedy Store. But before she was the town coordinator, she was a bartender out front with big boobs. So she used to make a ton of money. And then Freddie would just sit creepily at the corner of the bar calling her peekaboo because her nipples were out. I was like, what are you doing? You're supposed to be on stage. He's like, peekaboo. And I'm like, ew, it's so creepy. But then he wound up marrying her. But Mitzi loved her too because she had no interest in that.
Right.
And so she moved up quick and Mitzi put her upstairs. as the town coordinator because she was sweet and calming, you know?
What was her name again?
Corey. Corey Soto is her
name.
We call her Princess Corey.
Because I don't know if I was trying to get into that.
She replaced Scott Day. Scott Day was there for 7 or 8 years.
I was by no means ready to do the Comedy Store. I probably got in there at the right
time. When did you start?
13 years ago?
Oh, okay.
Whatever that is.
Yeah.
What is that now? 2000s?
I'm 9, so.
Wow.
I can't believe I'm at 9 already. February was 9 for me.
But don't you feel like hanging out, kind of you're absorbing comedy as you're waiting tables?
Well, like
you saw the worst and the best.
Oh, yeah.
You saw it all.
It's like a college.
Yeah.
You know, that I obviously couldn't pass. Stayed for 12 years. But it was great money, and I could do plays, and there was a time where I was a wrestler for a while.
Mitzi
used to freak out. And, you know, she was like, are you going to quit? And I was like, no. But there was like Friday nights where I went through this intense training. And sometimes I would show up at Mitzi's house in the morning and I'd have black eyes. Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. What happened? Did he hit you? No, nobody hit me. I took this job as a wrestler because I thought that would help me get closer to Meryl Streep. And I was Easy Rider from Wow Women of Wrestling in 2000.
What?
You can Google it. It's good times.
I think we will. That's really crazy.
There's so many.
It's real though, right?
Yeah. Joe Rogan used to come. His now wife. They would come. Jessica
Hilarious.
Rabbit. And they would come and cheer me on. And his favorite was because I would talk trash. You know what I mean? And like, so that's why they hired me, obviously, not my physique. You know what I mean? And they made me a part of this biker gang. So we were called Harley's Angels.
So ridiculous.
You know, you're killing it in show business when you have an audition in a hotel lobby.
So great.
And you bring a baseball bat to the audition.
It's so great.
And the only reason I went to the audition is because Joe Rogan and I were in the kitchen. Well, a lot of the comics, but I remember Joe specifically because we were coming up with stupid characters. And I was like, I'm not going to go to this audition. This isn't a real audition. They were like, you should go. You should go. And I have baseball bats in my car because I'm a hood rat. And so I came in the kitchen with a baseball bat and I was like, how do you think? You know, I'm just doing what I learned when I was a kid. And Joe was like, you have to do that. You have to do that. And so I did it. And they hired me.
Oh, my God.
I thought I was going to get arrested. And they hired me.
But isn't that how it is? When you kind of go into stuff just not giving a shit. And they're like, you're amazing.
When you don't want it. You
don't want it. It's going to come chasing you. So, so let's shift gears for a minute, though.
Sorry.
No, I love knowing
Babylon.
You. People need to know.
That should be the name of my podcast, Babylon.
That's a great. Do what you've got to do. I think you've got a lot. To say
to babble,
but I think we kind of wanted to talk about depression. I love your. It's good for people to get to know you a little bit before we get into the meat and bones of it. But I get a lot of emails from people, and they're always like, "I'm depressed. I have anxiety. I'm depressed." I talk about it a lot on this show because I think it's one of those topics that. People don't really talk about in mainstream culture.
Kind of, but they don't. It's
but
like,
they don't
it's kind
really.
Of grazed over.
Yeah.
Because people, I think, are embarrassed. And I'm going to say I know for sure I was embarrassed my whole life of it. And I know I had it as a kid. And this is terrible. Like when I, but when I was, we had a dog, naturally. Her name was Fluffy because they let the baby name her. And that was me. So Fluffy is what she looked like, and that's what she got. So we had her for 18 years. She was a poodle sheep mix. Poodle sheep mix, best dog ever.
Poodles are smart.
Yeah, because none of us were going to raise her. So and my dad left, so she was screwed, and she didn't have food a lot of times because neither did we. So she taught herself to go out the front door, and she became friends with the dog up the street, and the guy would feed her. Right? My favorite story ever, my mom was going to get the bus for work. And as she was going to get the bus, she saw the guy who was feeding her dog because she couldn't afford to.
Aww.
And the guy goes, oh, don't worry. She don't bite because Fluffy kept going to my mom like, hey, that's my owner. And my mom just goes, oh, that's all right. And she just walked by like didn't act like she knew who Fluffy was.
Oh my God.
She was so embarrassed. And then Fluffy knew more people in the neighborhood than me. And one time walking to school, that guy said, "Hey, there's Fluffy's sister." And I'm like, no, I'm Jimmy's sister, Johnny's sister, Karen's Kathleen.
Not the dog.
I am not.
I can't do it.
Or not put me in the canine.
Oh, my God.
So I used to like lay under the kitchen table. And we grew up in a row home, so it's tiny. And so we were all over each other. There wasn't anywhere for privacy, you know. We did have a bathroom door. I remember it. But somehow, somebody ripped it down. So there was no privacy. I have taken showers while my brothers were, like, shaving or shitting or whatever. And it's fine. Like, I'm used to it. And I'd see my brother Jimmy peek in, and I'm like, really? And he's like, "I'll give you a piece of gum." I'm like, I think that's a problem. That's weird. And he's like, "Come on." And he'd be on the toilet. Oh, and I'm like, "I look like you. I have no boobs. I'm same. I have nothing." And so, like, but it was always like a goof. Like, it wasn't creepy. Like, he wouldn't really look at me. I feel like I just outed my brother.
No, I think that's normal, isn't it?
To have
sibling curiosity.
Yeah, and mess stuff. With people and, yeah. and flush the toilet and make the water, you know, burning hot for a second.
Of course.
But my thing is, so I would lay under the table with Fluffy and just cry on her and be like, "You're the only one that understands me." And my mom would be like, "Get up, Jezebel." You know, just because we don't have time for that.
Yeah.
Like when, like nowadays, like I have two nieces that I believe have it. Same, you know.
Now, when you say, I mean, do you believe it's like clinical depression? Because there's,
absolutely.
There's a spectrum. I mean, what I'm talking about, like, there's the clinical stuff where you probably need to be medicated, and that's different than like just waking up every now and then and being like, "Meh, I'm not doing it." You know, like
I have a 13-year-old niece that comes home from school on Friday, puts her pajamas on, and does not go outside until Monday again.
It sounds like my weekend, is that?
Well, it sounds like an amazing weekend as an adult,
right,
but when you're 13.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's not good. Yeah.
No.
That's
not good. And she don't talk. I mean, I can see it in her. I feel it. I'm like, whoa. And the other one is 23, and she's been through everything. Eating disorders, cutting, you know, because it's in us, but those guys have privacy. So they had time to like really envelop it.
Oh,
whereas
right, yeah.
I was kicked like, "Get up, stop crying. Too bad. Get off the cross. Get your shit together."
Right. But then because that's my family too, which is a lot of like, "Oh, what is wrong? What are you crying about? You don't have a problem.
You don't know what problems are."
Exactly. And I heard a lot of that.
And that's
so
true.
It is. It is and it isn't. Because the problem is when people are constantly telling you don't have a problem and you're young and you're 13 and you're goth and heavy. You don't have, and you're constantly invalidated, it fucks with you so much harder. Because then you grow up to be somebody who thinks that they aren't entitled to feelings and you can't say shit. And that's when
that was happening to me. No, but you're right. And now that I think
scary.
Of it, like I try to explain to my nieces that like you really should talk to somebody. Don't feel like this is wrong or bad or... you know, because like everything was a shame when you were a kid. For me, at least,
shame, huge.
For sure.
That
shame.
My family. That's how we told each other we love each other was to shame the shit out of the other person for having feelings, for having
anything.
Whatever. Yeah,
everything was nobody else gets it, just us. Just shut it, shut the door. My grandma and my mom, like a common thing when they were kids was getting lice. And you know, my grandma would shut all the windows and close the drapes.
Oh, I thought you meant to shame the other person.
No, you that
yeah,
too.
Yeah, we did that.
That too.
Like mocking.
But I'm saying, like, this is another form of it.
Right.
Like, it should be ashamed of having anything
wrong.
Normal happen to you.
Right.
They took it as abnormal. You know what I mean? Like, they, I mean, my grandma would close up the house. And then my mom, that's what she was taught. So she would do the same thing with us. I mean, we didn't get lice because, I don't know, somewhere in there we have, like, black hair and it's nappy and so nothing gets in there. And none of us ever had lice until they marry somebody with finer hair. We're good. So that was one thing my mom didn't have to worry about. But I was a bedwetter all my life, and I kind of think it's because my brother Tommy would put us to sleep and he would be our babysitter and he would act out Alice Cooper's Welcome to My Nightmare with the makeup and everything.
Yeah,
and
probably.
So, yeah, you wet the bed till you're 18, you're like, "What's wrong with Eleanor?" Well, she's terrified. But I did.
Is that true? Did you really wet the bed until you were 18? Are you joking or being
no,
serious?
No, I'm being serious. And I'll tell you who taught me it was okay to say it.
Who?
Sarah Silverman.
Oh, that's right. Because she wrote.
She had a book called Bedwetter.
Yes, yes.
And she said some other lady wrote a book that made her inspired. Like, my family was like, oh, that's not normal. You know? And my brother Charlie was a bedwetter, and sometimes they make us share a bed. We almost drowned, the two of us. It's a sin.
But why do they...
In a bunk bed.
But what's the reasoning for... Isn't that some kind of response to... Like, are you having an emotional response to something, I think, bedwetting?
When I was... Because it was still happening when I was 18, that... 17 or 18, I forget. My mom took me to a doctor. Now, you got to understand, we couldn't afford things. Like, even the braces. I went to a school, and we still had to pay, but it was like... Not even close to a dental school
to have them.
So like when you're in a dental school and they got that thing called a window. I don't know if you remember that. If you have bad teeth, they used to put that raincoat in there to hold your mouth open.
Oh, yeah.
Like that plastic.
Yes, I had that too.
They called it a raincoat. And I'd be like, I hated the smell, everything. And then you'd hear, oops. And I'm like, no, not oops, soccer. You know, and I have a big thing. You couldn't argue. It was just all eyes yelling. But, so we didn't go to real doctors. But then when my mom's job started, like, kicking in, and she started getting... insurance for us, then it was okay, we got to find out why this kid's still biting the bed. This is bad.
Yeah.
So nobody even thought emotional. They were like, there's physically something
right,
wrong.
Because God forbid. Parents don't want to get their kids treated because it's a reflection on them in their minds as being a failure as a parent.
My mom says she's not depressed, but very depressed and extremely negative and always...
Your mother?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she had fucking 10 kids.
But wait a minute. One of the greatest people in the world will do anything for you. Like, even as a kid, there's 10 of us. We have the dog her sister gave her. You know, like, she couldn't afford the damn dog. She took the dog. She felt bad for the dog. And then my brother Jimmy's best friend got kicked out of his house, so he lived with us. My sister Kathleen was working at a daycare center, and she got attached to this little girl whose parents got killed on the same day. It was awful. So she lived with us for a year. She was black and white. So now we're in an all-white neighborhood right outside the projects, and my mom's sitting there rocking a little black girl, and the neighbors would walk by and be like, now they're coming out black? Like, what's happening in there? Like, just crazy, whatever, and a very racially tension area I grew up in, and we had a little black girl living with us. She looked like Diana Ross, absolutely gorgeous, by the way. But she lived with us for a year and a half until the grandparents figured out what to do with, like, because both her parents were killed on the same day.
Oh my God.
It was insane. Like, my mom would take everybody in.
But that doesn't sound... I mean, it's admirable. It really is. But at the same time, you're like, yeah, but mom, why couldn't you just take care of us? Like, did she ever feel that?
I'm saying, no. Because, like, it was like, oh, we have to help people. My mom's thing was, if you're able, you can help other people as well as yourself.
But she was depressed, you said, for it.
But depressed, no. I'm saying, like, she has depression. She just ignores it.
Ignored it. Oh, I see what you're saying.
So she just walks. Oh, that's nothing. Whatever. Just go to work. You have to go to work. You have to get up. We're not getting food stamps. We're able. We never had food stamps. We had nothing like that. And the whole neighborhood had it. But my mom wouldn't have it because she was like, no, I can work. My hands work. My feet work. I can walk. I can get a job. Mm-hmm. I can do whatever. I know how to type. I'm going to do this. And she did. She refused to take handouts. But if somebody needed help, she'd help them right away.
Wow.
But then, like... And as a kid, I always, like, looked up to her. I was like, whoa, she's like a hero, right? There was a guy, one of my brother's friends was in jail for a while, and his parents stopped taking his phone calls, so my mom did. So for years, our phone was tapped. And I was like, Mom, I can hear the guy. Why do you talk to him? Eleanor, somebody has to talk to him. No one's there to listen to him. So I'm like, but the phone is tapped, and I'm trying to have phone sex in the 80s with a cord.
But your mom, but she was depressed. And then,
meaning like she was like negative, like, that's not possible. Like, if you had big dreams, like, she wanted to be an actress. And my grandma told her, oh, you have to be beautiful for that. So just deal with what you can deal with. You know what I mean? Like, no. But my mom has this kind of negative, and she gets down a lot, but she fights through it. So I believed, watching her, that I could fight through it. I don't need medicine, or I don't need somebody to talk to. If she can do it, she don't want to get out of bed either. But she forces herself to. And I mean, nobody has a better relationship with their bed than my mom.
Yeah.
All her life. We used to joke about, like, she said, I'm going to go up and change my shirt after work. And she'd go to bed. but like a nap, not bed for the night.
Right.
Like a nap.
Right.
Because she was, like, exhausted. And I'm saying this was when we were in our teens and able to, you know, I mean, at 8 or 9, I was already smoking. I was already running the streets, basically. Mm-hmm. 9 today is like 25.
Yeah. Right, right.
That's how
right.
soft these kids are.
Right.
It is awful today. I mean, I meet a 9-year-old. I'm like, what? Still in diapers. What are you doing? Like,
yeah, I agree.
Toughen that kid up a little
bit. I was 13 and I was smoking and running the streets and like in goth clubs and I had a fake ID. And
oh,
I
yeah,
was
my,
doing drugs.
My sister Karen's ID. I was 13.
Yeah, but I feel like now that's definitely, it's not, I mean, they call it child services on your folks. If you let your kid walk to the park,
absolutely.
Unsupervised, now
it's sickening.
It's a different fucking world. Yeah.
But I mean, and then, but that world is real. Like that has to happen. I mean, I remember. Yeah. When I was a kid, I'm 44, so mid 80s, we'd be at the playground and there was a guy going through the neighborhood, like snatching kids up in a van. But he must have been in a different neighborhood, like a nicer neighborhood at first. So then when we heard he was in ours, we took it in our own hands.
Good.
I mean, we were like crazy people.
I love it.
That we'd see vans and throw rocks at it. There'd be like a soccer mom rolling the window down like, what are you doing? You know, we're not real smart, but we were going after it.
Yeah.
How many kids are in that car? They're mine.
But then, okay, so you grew up, it just sounds like you had no privacy. You had
no. There wasn't
internal,
never.
And you weren't allowed the space to even have, it sounds like, an emotional world of your own. Whereas my upbringing, total opposite. I was an only child and I was hiding from my parents all the time. I just hated being around them. So I was always hiding in my room or reading or, you know, trying to get the fuck out of the house. So it's a kind of different. It's interesting how
but
you
do
and
you,
I
are you close with your parents now? Or?
No. I mean, my dad, as much as I can be, like, he's pretty Eastern blocky. Like, he's from Hungary. He's a total hardcore immigrant.
But see, maybe they're because they were immigrants, and my grandma wasn't an immigrant. She was born here. Her parents were.
Oh, boy, yeah.
So it was their upbringing. Like, we're the change. You know what I mean? Like,
yes,
you're saying.
We're the transitional generation.
Yes. And so you're, like, Paul Mooney. I don't know if you know who Paul Mooney is.
I love Paul Mooney.
One of my favorite people in the world. But he was at the Comedy Store almost every night. And there was a time where my little sister was dating a black guy. And my mom's down for whatever, but she, all of a sudden, she was like, it's different lifestyle. You don't understand. things are going to happen to you guys that you don't understand. And I know you're in love, but, you know, this is going to be bad. You know, like, look at what happened to Chrissy's parents. That was a little black and white girl.
Oh.
Live with look at this, look at that. And it was true. What she was saying was true. And what she was saying, she really experienced. And a lot of interracial couples definitely went through that. But you can't take you can't help who you fall in love with.
Yeah.
And so for a while, she wasn't talking to my sister. And that never happened in my family. We didn't do that. We could fight, fist fight, come home, black eyes, knives sticking out of each other. But we were sitting on the couch at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Right there, you know, in that house or in the bunk beds. I shared a room with my brother. There were 7 of us in one room. I stayed with my brothers because I didn't know I was a girl. I didn't know what was happening. Thought I was a boy for a long time. I wanted to be a boy. I still want to be a boy.
Me too. I think I have what these kids call the gender.
Yeah.
I'm non-binary.
That's why. Listen, I was a kid and my best friend was this gay guy, Robert. God love him because he's transitioning right now.
Uh-oh.
And he was 2 or 3 years younger than me. And he knew he was gay out the gate. And I loved him because he was funny. He wanted to be a girl and I wanted to be a guy. So we were a match made in heaven.
Yeah.
And we went everywhere together. We'd rob the churches together. We did terrible, terrible things together. And we had so much fun. And my little brother Bobby and Edie used to hang out with him too because they loved, he was fun. Like Bobby did built a haunted house in our alleyway.
Mm-hmm.
And we had Robert work the door to get the money, basically. So it was 10 cents to get down the alley. He collected every dime from every person. I was like, yes. But like, he knew he was he knew everything. And so we used to have those conversations about that. I used to believe that I didn't stay in my mom long enough so that thing didn't pop out. Because that's the only difference. I thought like a man. I thought I was a boy.
I agree with you. I grew up, my mother hated, I think, a lot of things feminine and soft because she had to grow up hard. Like, she grew up hard,
see,
too.
See, my mom did.
My mom didn't. So femininity wasn't really something celebrated. And then I was raised with my dad as an only. He's a single parent, so like, I was raised kind of as a little boy. Like, we ate off paper plates, and if I wanted a bike, I got like a dirt bike, not a pink, you know, frilly, girly thing. Because my dad just didn't know any better. And I think I do. I just relate to dudes more. And you and I are in a dude.
Definitely. I'm a
industry.
Yeah. I, like you said earlier, I'm a woman. And I was like, I keep forgetting that. And I do. I honestly do. Yeah. And I'll sit in even as a kid, I'd sit and I'd talk trash with my brothers. And like, an older gentleman would come in and they'd be like, there's a lady in here. And they'd be like, no.
Try.
But not in an offensive way.
No, just because I get shocked sometimes too when men are like, oh, I'm sorry. And then they see you and you're like, what are you talking about? Like, right? See, and that's normal to me too. Because you and I are very on stage. We inhabit a masculine energy. Yeah. And we say the things that dudes say. And to some people, it's still considered like, whoa, you know, you're shocking. And you're like, why are you? I'm a fucking person. I'm not
exactly
just my tits, my ovaries, my baby. Like,
if
I'm
I was just my
thing.
Tits, I'd be a man.
Right.
So judge me on my tits away. Go ahead.
Yeah, but anyway, I mean, it is kind of cool that this whole gender stuff is coming out now. I'm not just.
I think it's a little too.
It's too cray cray right now.
Yeah.
People are like, I'm astral gender. And you're like, what's that? I relate to the space and stars. And you're like, no, dude.
Listen.
You're an asshole.
I believe in slaughtering. So, no, I'm kidding. But no, I get angry at stuff like that because they do make things up.
I think so.
I'm this, I'm that. Like, it's like.
Attention
seeking. It's attention, and it's like, oh, we're part of
a
group.
Sorry, I have to take this.
Are you okay?
This motherfucker. No, hold on.
Hello? Call Alex and Karen. Make them take an Uber.
Okay, sorry. I had to pause. My very important Instacart order is on its way, and I had to confirm which crackers I wanted.
And it's so white of you.
It's so white. I'll tell you, when you have a kid.
It's such a privilege to get crackers on cracker.
Can I tell you? When you have a baby, I don't want to go grocery shopping, and I'd rather, you know.
That's the greatest invention ever. Are you kidding?
I can't deal. I hate. Anyway, we're talking about.
Get that from my mom.
This gender stuff. And also, anyway, Eleanor, when I had paused it, we were discussing. Depression and also how it's people don't talk about it, and there's a lot of shame attached to it.
But
and
I think now they are talking about
now
it.
Now it's coming out a little bit. It's a little safer to be.
The problem is now it's like you can talk about it. Now they're making things up. Like, oh, I'm in this group. I'm in that group. I got this. I'm diagnosed with that. I can't work. All right. Now we went too far.
Yeah.
We got to pull it back a little.
Rein it in.
Rein it in.
Yeah.
But definitely talk about it. Like I think my 13-year-old niece should see somebody.
I think so, too. It sounds like she's got
a 23-year-old went and talked
problem.
To somebody, and she's doing great.
Yeah.
I mean, when she was having her problems in high school, you know, whatever, her parents let her go talk to somebody, and it worked.
Have you ever been in therapy before?
No, once with my first ex-fiancé, and I don't know why I went, and I am the worst person in therapy, and I know... I feel like Jay Moore, somebody used to do a joke about it, like him and his wife in therapy, and he's like, I told you. Like, that's how I was acting.
Oh, like it's a fight, yes. And like you're right.
Like when the therapist would side with you, you'd be like, I told you. And I felt that. I was sitting next to him thinking, am I right? Like, this is crazy. This is all his fault. Like, I couldn't even calm down in the therapy thing. Because my anger, my problem is I have anger bad. Mm. Bad anger. And I break things. I've broken a ton of mirrors, which explains all the bad luck. I've put my hand through car windows. I've had, like, I don't even see. I was always fighting as a kid. Anybody would pick on somebody, I set me off. And I black out and I come back and I'd be in the back of a cop car like, shit. Like,
dude, so you're still in it. Like, I feel like you're...
No, I'm still working it out because the anger,
there's
if
a
you
lot.
Suppress it,
yeah.
turns to depression.
Yes, that's what I have,
so
yeah.
So you start being like, I'll just sleep instead of open the door and go outside because the neighbor could walk by and look at you the wrong way and be like, motherfucker. Or you get in the car in L.A., you drive somewhere, I'll kill your whole family. You follow them home with the intention of killing the whole family. That's dangerous.
But a lot of people, I think when you get depressed, you're not conscious of the fact that it's repressed anger. Like, I don't know that I ever go like,
I feel like I read that somewhere.
No, you're
years
right.
ago.
No, you're
okay.
right that it is. Like, that's what I've heard too. But I know, like, when you're in it, I'm saying, like, when you experience it, like, I don't think I ever go, oh shit, what am I really angry about that I'm not dealing with? Because you're right. That's exactly what depression is. It's the repression of some anger feelings.
Kind of
and then it gets so mashed down that all you can do is sleep. And like you said, do these low grade activities. And everyone's done it. And I got to tell you, the one thing I've learned though, because it's almost unavoidable, especially if you have trauma in your childhood or whatever, there's going to be dark days.
Oh yeah,
there's
absolutely.
Dark spots in your
even
psyche
without,
in your brain.
It's genetics.
It's genetics, and there's just going to be shitty days. Everyone will have. But one thing I've learned is that on those days, I don't make the phone calls.
Yeah,
I don't answer the emails.
Sometimes I do take the day. You take the day.
Yes, you take the day. You don't answer someone that's upset you. If someone pisses you off, I tend to go, I'm going to pause on that. I'm not
well,
in the space.
That's good. I tend to answer.
Don't answer. Like if someone's pissing you, don't let it hook you when you're in it. Because then now you're making it worse. And then it's a chain reaction. And then it's, now I've gotten fired. Or now I've picked a fight with my spouse. I didn't really need to do that. I should have just been like, dude, don't fuck with me today. Like, I'm in a bad place. Or let's go out and eat ice cream. Let's do something.
Right. And now those days, I sometimes channel my mom and I say, if I'm feeling real low, like I can't get out of bed. And some days I'm like, I better get up. I'm going to get bed sores. Like I've been here a while.
Yeah.
So I get up and I'll be like, just even if you don't go for a run, cause I don't have kids. I don't have any responsibility. I don't even have a pet. Which, because I'm afraid I'll kill it or break it or something.
You won't.
No, because I'm wild. Like I get angry and like my biggest fear of having kids is it like a kid pissing me off, because that is a normal thing for a parent.
Yes, of course.
You look at a kid, you son of a
mother.
Bitch.
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, my mom has looked at me like, I will rip your head off, bitch. Like she, and my dad was a hitter. So I feel like I don't want to.
Can I tell you something? It's funny you just say that, because my mother was mentally ill, and for many, many years, I wasn't even conscious of this. I delayed having a child as long as possible because I think on some level I was afraid of becoming her. And I was afraid that if I had a kid that I would act out in the same ways that my mother did. My mom was a borderline and schizophrenic, so clearly I'm not any of those two.
No.
And I'm not her. And you have to remember, like, I'm not my dad. I'm not my mom. I'm not the school teacher. I'm not the people that maybe inadvertently harmed me and formed the neuroses.
They didn't even know they were doing it.
They didn't know. Yeah. And got, you know, I forgive
they
my
thought
mother.
It was normal.
Yeah.
Because it was
yeah.
passed down.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. We're the change in that, like, if I had a kid, eggs are probably dead now, but if I had a kid.
You never know, man. Go get it checked out.
Please. My mom had a hysterectomy and could probably get pregnant. She, you know, just, we're very fertile people, but I don't want kids personally. That's my own thing.
Yeah.
I don't want to pass this crazy gene down either. So I see my nieces struggle and it breaks my heart, because I know that my sister and my brother passed that down, but they didn't know they did that. They just fell in love and had kids like a normal person. But if I felt like I could be a lot more like my mom, even though she can be negative and sleeps a lot, I would have probably 10 kids like her. But I have that crazy anger side on my dad's side,
right?
That's just brutal, and it's mostly men. And
so your father was physically violent and verbally, I'm assuming, abusive. And you feel like that's what you...
Yeah, I got more of the physical Well, I guess on a verbally meet. No, I'm kidding.
No, never.
No. But my dad's completely out of touch. You know, and he grew up with a guy who constantly beat him up. That guy grew up with a guy who constantly. It was just passed down.
And he was in the
generation
Marines.
Then he joined the Marines. Mm-hmm. Ready, so he can kill people and not have to go to jail for it.
Of course,
that was his.
No, but those are the
at
people.
16.
But those are the people that make the best Marines, and that's exactly.
He's a scary man.
But that's wonderful that he knew that, and he did that. As opposed, to, I mean, later
he's killing people on the street.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, he also got in trouble in high school selling guns. So he thought, let me head over there. They give him out. So that was good. And then he's also born December 7th, and his sixth birthday was 1941, December 7th. Mm. And that's when they bombed Pearl Harbor and it was canceled. And he was pissed. So him and his friends threw bricks through the Chinese laundromat. So they're smart, too.
Chinese.
Guys, huh?
Amazing. So then how do you deal with your anger and with
working out?
Yeah.
That's like, people are like, whoa, you work out a lot. And I'm like, I know you think it's because I'm obsessed with like what I look like. And it isn't, because I eat whatever the hell I want. But my anger is so bad. Probably if I ate better, my mental health would be better. But I don't. I am a sugarholic. I cut it down a little bit because 2 years ago I had borderline diabetes.
Oof.
So people are like, you're too thin.
You're skinny though. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm constantly running or freaking out or
so you're
pent
but
up.
You're wound up, and definitely sugar and caffeine probably don't help someone's constitution who is already high strung or angry.
I do believe that all that has to do with it.
Yeah.
I mean, all that attributes.
Yeah.
But I'm an addict on top of it. So
an addict? Are you being like legit? You mean like
I smoked a cigarette when I was 9. It took me a long time to quit.
Yeah,
I did so much Coke soda that I was getting sugar. But what did they call them? There was lumps in my throat. I thought it was cancer. I thought I was dying. I was so happy and so depressed. Is it over? Thanks. And so I had like lumps, and that's what I had to go get tested.
Oh.
And they were from all the sugar.
Oof.
All the soda. Had I tried cocaine, I probably wouldn't be here today.
Now, how'd you get through 12 years at the Comedy Store without
Store? My neighborhood in Philadelphia. Oh, Jesus, Mary and Joseph. The Comedy Store is a cakewalk compared to what I grew up in. And honestly, because I had friends that would, you know, I remember showing up to my best friend's house and they had it all over the tables. And I was like, what are you doing? There's kids in here.
Well,
part of me had a moral, like,
right,
something.
The wherewithal.
Yeah.
But I said this before you got here and I recorded the intro, is that everyone thinks that comedians are more depressed than most people. And I'm not sure that's true, but I think we
just talk about it more.
We talk about it more. We go into it more because it's interesting. And also we work essentially in the darkest place a person can be employed in, which are comedy clubs, which is what's there? Booze, depressed people, low frequency low grade, you know, low energy frequency, bad energy, drugs. And if you're prone to these things and you work as a comedian in these environments and you're on the road and you're depressed and you're in fucking Topeka for a week, guess what? That's a perfect recipe.
Who's ever hiring in Topeka, I'll come out. as long as you have iced tea.
Oh my God.
That's my other addiction.
Oh, that's a good one. But depression and isolation, alienation, comics spend a lot of time alone too. That's another recipe for depression and disaster.
Yeah, sure. When you're alone with your thoughts, that's what I'm saying about these kids today. Like my nieces, they have one sibling. We had 9. So you're sitting there feeling sorry for yourself. You're going to get punched in the throat.
Right.
Quick.
There's no time.
So they got, you know, you're in their space. And so these kids could sit in their room, Google whatever they need, look at a TV, just veg out and listen to their thoughts. And it's just lonely. Like, you know what I mean? If you have that gene and that's where you're at.
You know what? I think I might. Like, I feel like,
I do.
Yeah. I feel like my shrink tries to, like, whenever I say this to her, I'm like, dude, I think my default setting is a bit depressive. Like, I just lean
it's
depressive.
It's nothing bad. Did you hear Neil Brennan talking about his depression? And he got something called TMS.
What's that?
And it's covered by insurance.
What's
and it
TMS?
Helps. It's some kind of something that you put next. It's like brain waves or something that kind of trigger the ones that are making you feel that way.
Hmm.
At TMS, I'm almost positive you said TMS, yeah. And Neil's one of 10. He's the baby of 10.
Oh, that's right.
He's
you guys have
10.
That in common.
And he's from Philadelphia, but the suburbs, they had money. Because I think his father was a lawyer.
Wow.
So they had real money. And they got to go to big schools, and I was playing with typewriters at times. But no, it's fine. I mean, it's just funny, like, because, again, that depression, it doesn't work in these, when you have all these siblings. And they don't let you feel. You don't have time. Even if you grow up in a big house, you still, but when it's just you, like you said, by yourself.
Isolation's the worst.
There was a neighbor, she lived right across the street, because we grew up in the row home, so the streets are real small and the houses are all connected. And right across the street, there was a girl named Jackie, and she was an only child. And she had a playroom. She let me go in. And I was like, oh my God. She's the richest person in the world. Like, I thought I went to the Queen's house. Like,
yeah.
I was in a mansion beyond mansions. And one day I was just, my mother's house on Saturdays was so chaotic because it was cleaning day and laundry day because that was her day off. Saturday and Sunday.
God,
and Sundays
woman.
Was reserved for church. So Saturday was the day. And so Saturday we had to do everything. And there was all this chaos going on behind me. And I always wanted to start my one-woman show because I can remember it so clearly. And I just look out the window into Jackie's house. Like, I wonder what she's doing.
What's that bitch doing all by herself?
I remember one day being deep in thought, like, wow, she's probably got all her dolls on the floor. You know, like when you're a kid and you get into that rhythm of, I mean, I still do it, but, you know, you get in, oh, she's probably got this out. She probably took that blue doll down.
Oh,
and
yeah.
As I'm thinking of her, what I saw in her house, I get hit in the back of the head with a shoe. And my brother Billy goes, take the effing laundry down. And I'm like, I hate it here.
It's so interesting.
You'd say, I'm going to run away. And my mom would say, don't let the door hit you in the ass.
Right. So on one hand, I mean.
But she was sarcastic.
Right. Which is not.
And
I
also
mean,
watched me and my brother Billy run away, which was funny.
We wouldn't. But right. So there is something to be said for kind of the old school tough love. There is something good and bad.
There has to be a pullback or something.
Yeah. Like, well, because like when I get in funks, I find that just disrupting the mantra, whatever horseshit that I am obsessing on, you know, when you get in a depressed day and it's everything sucks, everything bubba,
oh,
this
yeah.
fucking sucks.
Nobody likes me.
I'm a loser. I'm a failure. I'm in the book. Whatever it is that you're spiraling on, I find sometimes the only way to disrupt it is to disrupt it.
Exactly.
To go,
that's what
this.
I say about my mom. Like,
fuck
she
this.
Was like, I got to get up.
Yeah.
I don't want to go, but I got to do it.
I don't want to, but I got to wake up and get the baby every morning. I got to fucking go do the spot that I've signed up to do.
Yeah, yeah. I'm an idiot
the
for calling it.
Right, right. And then you kick yourself in the ass for even. But these things do keep you rolling, and it's not great. But sometimes having things to do and making plans is the only way out.
Kind of keeping yourself busy occupies your brain, even though some people have it severely and like will have things to do and just won't show up. And that's scary. Like, I'll show up. I've showed up at the store many a nights, like Jimmy Schubert says, with a callus on the roof of my mouth from chewing on a revolver all day. But
hilarious.
I love when he does that.
Hilarious.
Too. He goes, you see that?
That's fucking
that's a callus.
Amazing.
But he's right. Like, that you show up. I remember just two nights ago, I was at the store and I was in a deep funk. And, you know, I'm always nice to everybody at the store because that's my home. And that's, you know, when I was a waitress there, I took care of everything. And now as a comic, like, it's a different way to go in because you can go in and go out.
Yeah.
You can just do your 15 and get
and
out.
Leave, yeah.
Yeah. And that's all I wanted to do the other night. I thought, I don't have to do any side work. I don't have to see if Mitzi's all right.
Yeah.
I don't have to tuck her in. I don't have to, you know, all these things go through your head. And I'm like, I'm not talking to anybody.
Yeah.
And as soon as I got out of the car, there was 30 people in the parking lot. And I was like, what happened to the rule of no people in the parking lot? Like, and then hey Eleanor, oh hey, how are you? So you gotta put your phony face on.
Yeah.
But by the time I left, I felt better.
Of course,
because I forced myself.
Of course. And that's always the thing, is that when you the beginning
I think it was
feels
that day
bad.
I said, I'm texting you from bed. It was one of those days, yeah. So I was like, right, this is bullshit. I got to get up.
But there are, yeah. And then the first, like you said, there's a shift, right? Mm-hmm. There you go from your sad, low frequency, fucking horrible brain to, go, I'm faking it. I'm now in the motions of being a human being. Mm-hmm. I
don't even know who this comic is I'm talking to. You just gave me a kiss on the lips. Am I dating this asshole?
Right. I don't know why I turned but then eventually you do click with somebody or you have the right conversation. You're like, oh yeah, this is why I like being
or
alive.
You hear or you hear somebody had the same kind of day.
Yeah.
Or is going through the same kind of nonsense, whatever it may be that bugged you that morning or afternoon, whatever. So it was like, oh, okay. Oh, okay. So they're not happy either.
Yeah. And then you're great.
I'm going to get happy.
But I think, too, and from people listening who don't have a comedy store to go to at night. And
you have a job. You have a
job. But sometimes people hate their fucking jobs. But I think true. It's also on you to find your tribe, to find your community, to find the thing. You know, sign up for a fucking art class at the community center and maybe meet people. Sign up, go meditate with other people. There's cheap meditation classes in LA. That's what I do when I need to get the fuck out of the house. I go and I just meditate with a bunch of other lunatics and maybe after.
Diaz talked about meditating.
He does that?
Say it. Yeah.
Yeah, you stuttered a little.
You know what's so funny? Because he was saying,
I meditate, dog. I'm a meditator. I can't keep
quiet for 5 seconds, inside or outside. I'm a mess. So, but no, meditating, he was talking about it last night and he was trying to sell it to me and Dice, which is funny because we were doing his podcast and I've tried to get Dice to do yoga to relax.
Oh boy.
Because if anybody needs to meditate. And he looked at Joey like he had three heads.
Right.
Like, what, you do that? What's wrong with you?
But do you know what it does?
But Andrew's of that generation. Dice is of that generation.
Well, that's, yeah, he's of a different lane, exactly. Of a different everything. But what it does, for those of you, I think meditation's great for disrupting the flow of bullshit, of the dog shit thoughts that keep you.
That's right.
And it's just a disruption. It's another tool to disrupt the mantra, the negative stuff that's going on in your head. Anything you can find, a walk in nature, a swim. Water is wonderfully therapeutic.
Oh, yeah. I was a fish for years.
Me too. That's one of the things that I did when I was pregnant that got me out of those days of funkiness. The ocean's great if you live near the ocean.
I'm afraid of that, but I'll sit by it, but I won't go in it.
No, you have to go in. In LA, too, it's very cold. Anything to disrupt the pattern that you're going. Call somebody. Go over to someone's house. Sit on a couch
with
someone and watch TV together. Even just being in someone else's presence is helpful.
No, it's absolutely true. And if you can't talk to somebody, it's just not good. So if you, whomever you can find, even if it's unfortunately the mailman, like some people don't have, like they don't have the skills to go out and talk. I've met plenty of people that are like, you're the only person who'll listen to me. Everybody thinks I'm crazy. So I'm telling you, I have so many friends like that. And I'm like, you're crazy. Let me tell you a story. You know, but I don't have the look like they have or whatever it is that they think I look like that they don't. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we're all going through the same shit.
Yeah.
Life is hard. Nothing's easy.
Yeah.
If it, you know, it's, they say it's a gift because we do. It is a gift. We get it. But you have to like really live it.
Yeah.
And really get in it and really, you know, and I try to, and sometimes I'm like, I don't want the gift. I want to give it back. Take it.
Take it back.
Please. But you just, it is, and it's great that we're here and we're part of something, you know what I mean? So it's like, kind of take it in and know that there's bigger things.
Yeah.
Than a lot bigger. We're nothing on scale.
We're not, but also too, when you think about what's upsetting you today, look back at a year ago, what upset you a year ago, probably not the same thing. Meaning it's always a constant stream of stuff in your brain that's bothering you, right?
Yeah.
And there always will be a constant stream. There's always just chatter in your brain of crap that's upsetting you. And know that it's temporary, this discomfort that you're in, this funk that you're in, it's temporary and it goes away. And tomorrow's a new day and you might feel better. You might not.
Yeah.
But you might feel
okay. But every day. That's why they say one day at a time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not just for addicts, that's for real life. I don't even do one day at a time. I do 1 minute at a time because I go back and forth. I'm batty. I probably should be on meds.
Maybe, I mean.
But I can't do it. Because I'm an addict. I'm terrified to try. I've never smoked pot.
Oh.
Because I'm terrified to try
it. Yeah, but boo-boo, they dose you. You get the right dose. You know, it's not like they just give you, here's 10 Xanax or Zoloft.
No, I hear what you're saying. You take it. And then all of a sudden, and this happens with most prescription, any friend I have that's on prescription, after a while, it doesn't work anymore.
Oh.
So now you up your dosage. So now you're like, oh, I'll just up it myself. I'm not going to call the doctor.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So now I'm, you know, I have a friend, cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, because she keeps upping her own dosage.
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, she thinks if she don't take a pill that day, it's okay for her to drink.
No, I'm like,
hey, numbnuts. And then she shows up to a party and ruins everybody's time.
Yeah.
So no, you're like, I get it. You're going through stuff. And she did go through a lot, but it's like nothing more than anybody else, you know?
No. And I think that's the importance of doing podcasts, and especially for comics and for normal people who are in comedians. To, you know what I mean? Like,
civvies,
I don't mean that.
Out there.
Yeah, I mean like non-comedians who have these podcasts out in the world. I'm saying like, who talk about real shit. It's so, cause I remember growing up and being really depressed when I was 13, 14, 15, and I was suicidal.
Oh, yeah.
I fucking hated everything. But I remember like, what did we have? Like, go ask Alice. Like, there's a book written in the 60s. The Brady Bunch.
That raised me, dude.
Right.
That was my shit right there.
Right. But it was so unrelatable. And had I had a show I could listen to.
What do you mean it was unrelatable?
That a host was like, hey, I've gone through this, or you're totally normal. This is what being a fucking human is like. And not every minute that you're not dancing out of joy. Like, I think too, popular culture, the belief is, and if you look at Instagram and Facebook, that life is amazing all the time. Look how much fun I'm having. Aren't I a winner?
Yeah.
And I'm fit.
I was just a taco for Instagram or whatever it's called. No, what's it called?
Right.
Snapchat.
We're having fun. Look how many friends I have. And
look
it's
at
like,
all the emojis.
Yeah.
Liars.
Yeah.
Liars.
Yeah. And I think that's the goal, is to be perfect and happy all the time. And it's just not.
No way.
Normal life doesn't roll
it's
that
impossible.
Way.
Possible.
Yeah.
No. But I did watch the Brady Bunch, like, wow.
Oh,
that
fuck
real?
That show. Yeah.
But, and then when you, like, as I got older, I was like, oh shit, they were widowers? I didn't even remember.
But didn't the dad die of AIDS?
Oh, in real life.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't live in real life.
So he was, but the reality is that, you know, Mr. Brady had AIDS.
And Mrs. Brady was sleeping with Greg. So kudos to you, big girl.
Which is ironic. That show was a mess in the real life.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Amazing, bizarre backstory. But when I watch it, I'd be like that was like utopia. Is
yeah,
a place
of course.
That could house. I mean, like Judy Gold. I don't know. That's one of my heroes. Judy Gold. Do you know who she is?
She's a comedian. Yeah.
One of my favorite comics in the world. And she used to be like, you're a fucking architect and you put two rooms for six kids.
Right.
You're an idiot.
Oh, right.
You know?
That's true.
I used to die laughing because I was like, I didn't even think of that.
That's true. Mr.
I thought,
Brady.
Look at all the space they had in that one room. They
right.
got their own beds and they weren't stacked on top.
Right.
We had a triple bunk, a double bunk, and my brother Tommy had a single bed. And the double bunk didn't come for a long time. And that had drawers. That was amazing. We thought like we made it. But the triple bunk, we used to share the beds in the triple bunk.
God.
I was on the mattress because I was a chick. So I was on the mattress that pulled out underneath the triple bunk bed.
Oh, my God.
Like, who lives like that?
You should write your own sitcom. Just the 10 of us.
They passed. Just the 10 of us. I used to watch that show, too.
Was that a show?
Unrelatable show.
Yeah, it's all dog shit.
He was a coach. Everybody loved him at school.
Oh, boy.
BS.
Where's the normal sound? Well, anyway, that's our. I gotta go. My nanny's gonna leave here. And,
you know
but thank
I'm
you so
go
much,
play with the baby.
Eleanor. Oh my
I'm
gosh,
excited.
For coming. I really appreciate it. You're so funny and interesting.
Thank you for having me.
I think you should start your own podcast because you have so many stories. You really need to put out.
I did have a podcast called The First Five, which I was trying to get you on, but my friend got a job in production, so we stopped doing it. But now I should just start my own up. You're right.
Yeah, man.
Man up, Elle.
Do
man
it.
Up. Pull your penis out.
Pull your dick out. We're
you
both.
Know you have one.
You and I are. We both identify as a male, right? Are we gender dysmorphic?
I do. And Caitlyn Jenner is stealing my look, so I got to get my cock out quick.
Well, dude, it's been very deep, bro, and I appreciate you coming.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. All right, guys. All right, stay deep, bros. Until next week. I love you. Meow.
It's Christina P, a.k.a. Miss Jeans. This ain't your mom's house. It's a different theme. Gotta be critically thinking. Like you caught up at a cocktail party. Our thoughts start to sink in. John Locke, or was it Socrates? Aristotle or Plato, maybe Hippocrates. Got us talking all properly, topically. Just a comedian discussing these philosophies. Serious questions, silly people. What's that? That's deep, bro.
It is the ultimate metaphor for life. And you know what that is?
What?
That's deep, bro. That's deep, bro. That's deep, bro. That's deep, bro.